Pearl Church exists to express a sacred story and to extend a common table that animate life by love. A primary expression of our sacred story is the weekly sermon. If our sermons inspire you to ponder the sacred, to consider the mystery and love of God, and to live bountifully, would you consider supporting our work? You can donate easily and securely at our website, pearlchurch.org, or follow the link in the podcast notes. Thank you for partnering with us in expressing this sacred story.
God, this morning, as we ponder this mystery of resurrection, we pray that you will help us once again enter into this truth that as we fall and rise, we are invited to grow and to become. In your name we pray. Amen. You may be seated. Well, happy Easter. It is good to see you today. I was thinking this morning about some of the Easters of my past, and one memory that sticks out very strongly for me, it's one of the few memories I have from this particular Easter. I was very little, and we used to go to sunrise service. Did anyone do sunrise service when they were in their community? Yeah, we went to sunrise service, and because it was Easter, my parents dressed me up in this little light sky blue suit with a sky blue vest and white leather shoes. And I think everybody should have known right then where this was all headed. Today we reach the pinnacle of the Christian story. This whole year has been building up to this celebration. In Advent and Christmastide and Epiphany, we ponder together the mystery of incarnation, this wonder that divine life can inhabit our human frames. The mysterious union of divinity and materiality. In Lent, we ponder the mystery of atonement, the bringing back together into unity of what has been fragmented, broken, culminating in Good Friday, this vulnerable and self-giving solidarity of the divine in all our places of brokenness. And now, Eastertide, we ponder the mystery of resurrection. And what I'd like to invite us into this morning is to ask, what does resurrection have to say to us here today? When I was growing up, going to sunrise services in my little blue suit, this story of resurrection was presented to me primarily as a fact about something that happened thousands of years ago to Jesus. Jesus dies on the cross, is laid in a tomb, and 3 days later rises again. And so, we were told, you can know that when you die, you will live again, because death is broken. Resurrection, then, was about something way back then, and about something off later in the future. Now, that's all well and good, but what gets left out of this story is whether resurrection has anything to say about this life where I find myself today, here and now. Assenting to a belief about Jesus, assenting to a belief about the afterlife. Those are good, but they leave us with a big gap in how to deal with now. Because I, like you, walk now in a life that has a lot of death in it. And not even just capital D death, the loss of life. I mean all the lowercase d deaths, the small but significant losses. The tangles and the muddles in which we find ourselves every day. The death of a dream, the death of a relationship, the death of a career, the death of a season. If I had a nickel for every time I've heard the phrase the death of democracy recently, I'd be able to afford all those tariffs. Does resurrection have anything to say to these lowercase d deaths? And especially today, I'm thinking about these deaths that we carry which burden us with shame. The dreams that died and we were sure it was our fault. The relationships that faltered and we feel we're to blame. The career that ended and we think, oh man, if only I'd done better. These pains that we carry that we can hardly bear to look at because they fill us with shame. There are deaths that we carry around within us like tombs. Sealed over and shut, and we would rather not look at them again. And yet they haunt us. Can resurrection speak to these? I'm really interested in this particular kind of little death because the older I get, the more the tangle that they cause in my lives is just irksome. Irksome to the place where I finally took my own advice to others and got myself into therapy to try to roll back some of those stones on some of the tombs of shame and to look inside and see what we could do. I assume that you, like me, could name places in your own life that you would like to roll a stone over that tomb and never look at it again. Maybe there are things you look back on and can't believe you did that make you want to crawl into a hole and just die. Maybe there are things that were done to you and they're not your fault, and yet the shame makes you feel like maybe I kind of deserved that. And that makes me very interested in the story of Peter, the disciple of Jesus, which we read this morning. Peter, called by Jesus on the shore of the sea fishing to drop his nets and become a disciple. Peter, who becomes one of Christ's closest three, his most trusted. Peter, who becomes the first disciple to name that Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah, the one anointed to lead the people into peace. Peter, who witnesses the transfigured Christ shining in glory. Peter, who the very night Jesus is arrested, swears that he will never, never desert Jesus. And Peter, the one who hours later, in fear for his life, denies ever having met Jesus. Peter, who after the resurrection doesn't stick around but flees to his hometown, gets back on a boat and goes back to fishing, hiding from his shame. Peter, who is stuck. Peter, who is carrying within himself a tomb, rolling that stone over it and never wanting to look at it again. Like Peter, we carry these tombs and we seal them up, and they get us stuck because these tombs tell us who we cannot be and what we cannot do. Peter can't be a follower of Jesus anymore, certainly not after that. I can't be a whole person, not after that. I can't be loved, not after that. I can't reach my dreams, not after that. It's been for me a big shift to come to think of resurrection, not as something happening thousands of years ago or something happening way off in the distance of afterlife, but rather to allow resurrection to become a lens through which I interpret life here and now. Here at Pearl, we talk about these Christian mysteries, these core ideas at the heart of the story of Jesus. And they're mysteries because, like multifaceted jewels, throughout the history of the church, Christians have kept turning them and finding more and more depth, sides, and meaning. These mysteries, incarnation, atonement, resurrection, Trinity, we hold them not as dogmas to affirm, but rather as lenses giving meaning and helping us make sense of our days. And resurrection is a lens by which we begin to anticipate, to look for new life growing out of the tombs that we carry. To borrow a phrase that Mike uses, tombs become wombs that bear forth new life. Tombs become wombs. I think this is the point of our reading this morning from the Gospel of John. We heard Jesus and Peter sitting on the beach in the days after the resurrection as one of Peter's tombs becomes a womb bearing forth new life. But to get the impact of that story, I want to back us up a little bit because the Gospel of John has been building up and building up to this moment. So the Gospel of John is very carefully structured to help us think about resurrection as a new creation by paralleling it to the creation poem of Genesis 1. So just as Genesis opens with the words, "In the beginning, God," John's Gospel starts, "In the beginning was the Word." So already we are cued to think, this is a creation story. This is a story that tells us, like the Genesis poem, what will give our lives meaning and hope. And just as Genesis opens with the creation of light, so John quickly tells us that the Word is a light shining in the darkness. And just as in the beginning, the Spirit hovers over the waters of chaos, so John draws our attention to the Spirit hovering on Jesus, resting on Jesus in the waters of baptism. Okay, so having clued us into this creation theme, John then builds his whole presentation of the life of Jesus around a few sets of seven. There are 7 days of creation in Genesis, but 7 miracles and 7 I am statements that Jesus says and does throughout the Gospel of John. And these sets of 7 echo for us those 7 days of creation. But then there's an 8th miracle, an 8th day, the resurrection of Jesus. And here we find a conscious echo of the creation story, because just as Genesis begins with a man and a woman in a garden, so in John 20, on the morning of the resurrection, we again find a man and a woman in a garden beside an empty tomb. Mary saw Jesus standing there, but she didn't know it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you looking for?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. So then the whole Gospel of John is trying to help us see the resurrection as a new creation. The early Christians called this the 8th day. In fact, early Christian baptismals, and still some today, were always 8-sided, octagonal, to remind us of that 8th day that we were entering into. Because if you want to tell the story of creation, John is saying, you need to tell a story not of 7 days, but of 8 days. Because the story of creation is about how we become, how we as humans become. And central to that is resurrection. Our becoming whole as humans is developmental. We grow, we learn, we develop. And how? Well, by falling and then rising. And falling and rising and falling and rising over and over. And this process of becoming, our story of creation includes resurrection, because the falls, the many kinds of deaths that we all face, the losses and the failures and even the tombs of shame, they become part of our story of becoming. That's what it means to be human. It's what it means to become whole. And it's an insight that lets us start pushing at those stones we've rolled over our places of shame. Living in the 8th day means understanding that the way humans become and grow includes resurrection. And we see this everywhere. Wendell Berry illustrates this beautifully in one of his Sabbath poems, where he meditates on a grove of trees whose leaves rise and fall and fall and rise. Another Sunday morning comes, and I resume the standing Sabbath of the woods, where the finest blooms of time return, and where no path is worn, but wears its maker out at last, and disappears in leaves of fallen seasons. The tracked rut fills and levels. Here nothing grieves in the risen season. Past life lives in the living. Resurrection is in the way each maple leaf commemorates its kind by connection, outreaching, understanding. The bud swells, opens, makes seed, falls, is well, being, becoming what it is. This story of resurrection, this 8th day, invites us to look at all these tombs that we have sealed up in our lives, the places that we hold as death, as shame, and to begin to be curious. What if these tombs that I hold are actually wombs inviting to new life? So this is where we can rejoin Peter, because having brought us to the 8th day, John wants to show us what resurrection life looks like as it speaks to these tombs within us. So after the resurrection, John tells us that Peter and the other disciples head back to Galilee in the north, their hometown. And this is interesting, because you would think that after the resurrection, there'd be much joy and being with Jesus. But actually, Peter flees. Peter carries the tomb of his betrayal and his shame to his hometown. And it tells him, That life as a disciple, that is dead. And so just as in the Genesis creation story where we have Adam and Eve fleeing the presence of God and hiding among the trees, well, Peter is now hiding among the nets. And just as God goes in that garden looking for Adam and Eve, so Jesus shows up on the shore of Galilee and lights a fire and begins cooking a meal. We could say he's setting a common table. Just to drive the point home, John includes this really interesting little detail. When they realize it's Jesus, John writes, when Simon Peter heard it was the Lord, he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and jumped into the sea. Now that's an interesting detail, and I've always read that being like, okay, so he's naked. Cool. But if we think back to that Genesis story, like Adam and Eve who hide their nakedness from God in shame, Peter is also covering himself as he approaches God, as he approaches Christ. So what will happen? Well, if we're following the Genesis story, we know what to expect. Adam and Eve get cast out of Eden into death, and so we assume Peter faces exile for his betrayal. And I can only assume this is what Peter felt swimming toward the shore. Here it comes. I'm going to get what I deserve now. But instead, the tender conversation that follows serves to unroll the stone and invites Peter to sit with Jesus in utmost compassion, holding both what has happened and also what is most deeply true about Peter in both hands. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my lambs. A second time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, tend my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Here, Jesus is just unfazed by Peter's failure. And in fact, the failure, the shame, the tomb actually just becomes this relational space in which Peter is invited to know himself more deeply and with the deepest empathy and kindness, to learn who he really is and what he really wants. To Peter's surprise, the compassionate Christ makes this tomb into a womb, bringing forth an even more robust life for Peter. Beloved church, I believe that this is part of what the mystery of resurrection has to say to us today. Far from just something about thousands of years ago or something about what will happen when we die off when, resurrection is a mystery, a lens by which we can begin to approach the tombs that we are carrying in our own lives, the ones that keep us stuck, with total compassion, because this is the eighth day. Of course we fall. Of course we are not always what we would like to be. Of course we must fall and rise and fall and rise and fall and rise. This is just what it means to be human. And in this eighth day, the garden we find ourselves in is not one where we need to hide in trees. It's not one where we need to seal up the tombs. Rather, this garden is the kind of place where Christ will kindle a fire, cook a meal, and spread a table, and so gently invite us to sit with our tombs compassionately until they become transformed into wombs. Just like the Spirit hovering over the chaos at the beginning calls forth life, so the Spirit hovers over the tombs of chaos in our own hearts, inviting us so tenderly to learn, to grow, and to live into the freedom of this eighth day. Now, that's a process. It's not going to happen all at once. It likely will take a trusted friend or a therapist. It'll take a journey. It might take seasons of grieving before we're ready to look. We might need a season to hide before we're up to the challenge of rolling back the stone. But this story of resurrection tells us that divine love is compassionately ready to help us, to so gently roll away the stones, and to sit with us and invite us into becoming. Will you pray with me? We fall and we rise. We fall and we rise. We fall and we rise. But this is the eighth day, and God, your Spirit hovers over the tombs we each carry and beckons them become wombs of new life.
We hope that this sermon inspired you to ponder the sacred, to consider the mystery and love of God, and to live bountifully. If you don't already support our work, will you begin today? You can donate easily and securely at our website, pearlchurch.org, or follow the link in the podcast notes. Thank you for partnering with us in expressing this sacred story.